Coming up on Tech News Today, is Lenovo's new Chromebook a challenge to Windows? Also, Yelp gets into hygiene. We think it's probably a good thing. And is Netflix breaking net neutrality? How would that happen? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, January 17th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Amazon isn't going to bring its MP3 store into its iOS app. That would mean giving Apple 30% of the cut. But Amazon has optimized its MP3 store to work well in the iOS Safari browser. iOS users can buy music from the service via the mobile version of Safari. Purchased tracks will save to the cloud player and then can be downloaded to the iOS device as well as other Amazon-enabled devices like the Kindle Fire, for example.
Facebook's been testing free calling over Wi-Fi and cellular data for Messenger for iPhone users in Canada. And now a free calling button has appeared in the app for U.S. users as well. No App Store update required. To make a call to another Messenger for iPhone user, all you need to do is open a conversation with that person, tap the I button in the top right corner, and then tap free call.
Lenovo announced it is coming out with its own Chromebook. The ThinkPad X131E will be available for the education market only starting on February 26th. The X131E has an 11.6-inch screen, runs on an Intel chip, weighs under 4 pounds, and Lenovo claims the battery will last for an entire school day.
So you have to go to school for the battery to last. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Wall Street Journal reports that according to its sources, AT&T is mulling a move into Europe. Dutch provider KPN is one possibility for an acquisition. It's the largest mobile company in the Netherlands, and it's been trying to sell subsidiary operations in Belgium and Germany. EE, a.k.a. Everything Everywhere, a joint venture of T-Mobile and Orange in the UK, is another possible target. Don't expect anything soon, though. AT&T is apparently just studying the targets.
More AT&T news. The company is allowing more iOS users to make FaceTime calls over its network for no additional charge. Unless, of course, you're one of them unlimited plan freeloaders, you don't get anything. It used to be only customers with mobile share plans, and those using an LTE device on a tiered plan could use FaceTime over data. Now customers with non-LTE tiered plans can do the same. The company claims it's just rolling out the service gradually in order to have minimal impact on the mobile experience for all of our customers.
U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz issued a statement extending her sympathy to everyone who knew Aaron Swartz while defending the office's prosecution of Swartz. Ortiz made clear that those who prosecuted Swartz acted appropriately and as prosecutors had to uphold an oath to enforce the law.
The Wall Street Journal reports Asus is working with Microsoft to get a license to make a Windows phone. Asus makes several successful Ultrabooks as well as the Google Nexus 7 tablet. It also makes an Android phone slash tablet combo. You might know the Pad phone. Asus was one of the few manufacturers to see its PC shipments rise in 2012, them and Lenovo. Currently, Nokia, HTC, and Samsung make Windows phones, while LG is also rumored to be seeking a license.
$22,000 for LG's brand new 84-inch 4K TV is crazy, they said. No one will pay such a ridiculous price, they said. Well, Shozan Aibo claims that LG has already sold 300 units in Korea. Although not the most expensive 4K set on the market, the TV is obviously 4K, great resolution, LG's Cinema 3D technology, as well as 3D sound through integrated 2.2-channel speakers.
Did you pick up one, Sarah? I was thinking about getting one for my
I don't live in Korea, Tom. Come on, listen.
You could order it, import it. Anyway, Peter Kafka at All Things D reports Google has agreed to buy a minority stake in Vevo, according to sources. Vevo provides music videos to Google-owned YouTube. Vevo itself is already a joint venture of Universal Music and Sony Music, along with Abu Dhabi Media. The deal is supposedly bigger than the $35 million Google sunk into Machinima, but it will not close until long-term licenses for videos are resolved.
Nokia continues to restructure. The company will cut 300 IT jobs and will also outsource over 800 more. Nokia has been streamlining its operations to reduce costs since June 2012, when it announced it would lay off 10,000 people. This latest announcement is part of that larger cut. Nokia will be reporting its Q1 earnings on January 24th.
All right, this episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. We're big fans of Gazelle. I've used it over and over to sell my old gadgets. And if you got a new iPhone or maybe a Galaxy S from Samsung for the holidays, maybe you're really good. Got yourself a new iPad or a MacBook. Before you give away or bury your old gadgets in a drawer, check out what they're worth at gazelle.com. It's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. The extra cash you get, that's the gift you give yourself. The best kind sometimes. Gazelle makes selling last year's gadgets fast and simple. Here's what you do. You go to their website, like I said, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and then lock in that quote for 30 days. That gives you some time to make a transition if you need to. Once they get your gadget, you'll get paid within a few days. Go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your iPhone, your Android, your BlackBerry, your iPad, other Apple products. Do it today because your gadgets probably are not going to gain value over time, and you'll get some cash for your old stuff without the hassle. Gazelle has paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers, and I'm one of them. Get free shipping. Most qualify for a free box. If you don't even have a box around, they'll send you one. So go check it out. Sell last year's gadgets today at gazelle.com, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Very happy to have a first-time guest on Tech News Today joining us, Bob Levitas, author of Mac OS X, Mountain Lion, iPhone, and iPad for Dummies books, as well as Dr. Mac Consultant. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
I love this technology. This is so awesome.
Oh, I'm glad you're having a good time. It's good. It's great to have you joining us. We are going to start talking about that Lenovo ThinkPad Chromebook. Ayaz, what's the deal with this one?
Well, okay, here's the deal with this. Lenovo's backing Chrome OS with the ThinkPad X131E, like I mentioned in the news fuse. Now, the X131E already existed as a Windows-powered machine, but this is going to be a new version coming out February 26 for school systems. Specs, 11.6-inch screen, 1366 by 768 display, 3.92 pounds. And like I said before, the battery is supposed to last the entire school day. Now, this is like the third manufacturer of Chromebooks. Samsung and Acer both make Chromebooks at under $250. That's available for the general public. You know, every time we talk about Microsoft and Windows, we usually ask, where else would an OEM go? Bob, with Lenovo's move, do you think that Chrome OS is going to become a much larger alternative or a real alternative to Windows?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm so fortunate in my, you know, my middle name is Dr. Mac, and I've been fortunate enough to not have to really work with Windows at all. And so nobody lends me Chromebooks to play with. Or Android phones or tablets, for that matter. It's kind of like I'm not sure about anything except Apple stuff.
Fair enough point. You know, Tom, we looked at Microsoft change its entire UI to this tile-based UI. Desktop became an application. Its Windows interface kind of pushed aside. And then we had Chrome OS change from this browser-only to a windowed interface. Do you think that Google's got a shot?
A shot of what?
A shot of taking away some of Microsoft's foothold with OEMs.
Nah. Now, this is not a competitor for Microsoft Windows, in my opinion. This is an entirely different market. It might even be more of a competitor for tablets. Could it shave off a slice of Windows from maybe the Ultrabook or the Netbook market? Possibly. But I think what Google is aiming after here is to carve out a new area that is, you know, the super cheap laptop. Now, do we know how much Lenovo is charging for these new ThinkPads?
No, that's not available yet. And it's supposed to be, you have to bid as a school system. So I'm not sure exactly right.
This is sort of Google saying, well, if we go head to head in the enterprise with Microsoft directly, we're going to lose right now. So let's find a market that is cost sensitive. That's education. And let's figure out how to make some deals that will get us to be able to sell a lot to places that won't mind that they don't have all the bells and whistles of enterprise management that Windows has. So I think this is smart. And I think Lenovo is smart by saying, hey, we're used to handling these big contracts. We're the perfect partner for something like this. So we'll make an education version of the Chromebook. We'll work with the schools and get laptops into schools. So I think this is for as the education market, probably more of a competitor for tablets. The stories you always hear about iPads going into schools, because you can do a lot more. You got a keyboard built in.
Sarah, you know how Apple's been traditionally in the education market. Do you think this is going to take away from Apple's market share when it comes to the education world?
Yes, I do, as long as it's significantly cheaper and the people who run educational institutions feel that something like a Chromebook is plenty for whatever the kids are doing. I mean, Chrome OS is... If you've used it, you know that it's limiting, and at the same time, it's really handy, and depending on what you're actually trying to achieve, it can be great for a variety of certain tasks. In the educational sector, I think it makes a lot of sense, maybe even more over a Windows machine, for limited use, which, of course, is probably something that teachers are interested in the classrooms, because you don't necessarily want so many tools for the kids that they're not staying focused. So I think the price has a lot to do with it. If Samsung and Acer are both selling Chromebooks to the public for $200 or a little bit more. I mean, how far down can Lenovo go? You said the schools have to bid. So I guess it depends on, what market we're talking about. But yeah, it sounds like this is definitely a competition for Apple.
Aaron Jay in the chat room is saying that the reported price is $249. That sounds like a good price to me when it comes to a notebook, especially since you can manage these things in a totally different way. I think I personally think that Microsoft should be concerned really about this, because for the longest time they've had a dominant operating system. They've done enough of a shift in the UI that it could confuse enough consumers that these manufacturers that pulled away from Windows RT, like Samsung, they can go into the Chrome world a lot easier. And with Chrome's change in its UI into that new windowed interface, which is the old familiar windowed interface to a lot of people, I think it's got a chance.
And if $250 is the right price, or maybe a suggested starting price or something, it's funny. Some people in the chat room are saying that that's perfect for schools. Others are saying that's way too expensive for schools. But it is about the same as the Samsung, a little bit more expensive than the Acer, but it's in the ballpark. And again, just a rumored price. Let's move on to Yelp, trying to get us all a little cleaner, a little healthier when we choose our restaurants.
Yeah.
Hygiene is important, right,
Sarah? Yeah, hygiene is very important. In fact, you're right on the money. Facebook obviously had its big graph search news this week, and a lot of people were saying, ooh, watch out Yelp. Yelp stock took a hit. It was kind of like Facebook is really gunning for that Yelp market. Yelp has introduced something that it explained in a blog post called a new open data standard called the Local Inspector Value Entry Specification, LIVES for short, which enables local municipalities to display their hygiene inspection data as a business attribute on Yelp. Basically, what it looks like when you look at, so that's the blog post about it. But if you look at a sample restaurant entry, you see, in a number out of 100 that shows what kind of rating that the restaurant got. Obviously, this is, government organizations. My mom actually used to work for the public health department of Sonoma County in California. So she was well aware of, what goes into all of these restaurant inspections. And, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, they look at a lot of things. So if you're the kind of person who's ever gotten food poisoning or just is, really concerned about cleanliness and, flu season and all of that stuff, these are the sorts of things that you'd love to know about. If a restaurant has had really poor ratings in the past, you'd see that. You'd see that as long as the municipality is cooperating with Yelp to let them have this information. Now, this is only happening right now, adding restaurant inspection scores to reviews on business pages in San Francisco and New York so far, but says as long as local authorities are open to working with us and giving us this information, because it's really for the good of the public, for everyone's knowledge, we want to roll out the feature to other cities. I got to say, I mean, even though maybe my favorite burrito place, you know, if it gets like a 57 rating out of 100, yeah. I'd be like, yeah. No, I really still want it. I think more information is better in this case because we are talking about, you know, people's health and avoiding getting sick. Ayaz, you're homesick right now. You've been for a few days. You know, you brought it back from CES with you. Is this the sort of thing that you would appreciate?
Yeah, I definitely think this is a great way of putting up government data that could normally be hidden. Because if you're going to look out, go to a government website and try to find this information, or if the scores would be posted on the front doors of some of these places, like they are, there's something different about when you're doing research quickly on Yelp. The fact that this data is being presented in a really friendly way to explain, hey, by the way, there are scores. If you're unaware of this, there are scores for restaurants in these cities, and this is available to you in a really simple manner. I'm just hoping this starts a trend. I'd love to see other government information because it's out there when it comes to all kinds of changes in legislation and scores and reports. All these things are out there, but they're put on government websites, which are kind of unfriendly. So if they can be integrated into services like Yelp or whatever else, I think that's just great for everybody.
I want to see the pictures in Yelp because here in L.A., they put those big signs in the windows that with the A.
Oh, yeah.
And like I think I've only one time have I ever seen a B.
Well, for anybody.
It's like A or closed.
It's funny. In fact, I have heard San Francisco is considering the ABC rating system. I think it goes down to D. Maybe even F. I'm not sure. For anybody who's not familiar, in the whole county of Los Angeles and maybe even some others down in the L.A. area, every single restaurant, if you serve food or beverages or whatever, has to display in their front window, clear as day, what their rating was via their last health inspection. And I mean, there were a few Bs, Tom, and I saw a C once, and I was like,
no kidding,
I mean,
really?
How do you not just turn off the lights and go, you know, how can you be running a C business? There's a big C here. Who would
were
ever go in?
Were there people eating in it?
Yeah, there were. I'm not going to say which restaurant it was because maybe things have changed since then, but there were people in it. It's the sort of information that it's like it would hurt businesses for sure. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of businesses going, this Yelp thing is going to be, you know, the financial ruin of us. But again, it's information that the government has anyway, and you could find if you really wanted to. This is just making it easier for everybody.
Bob, I think all of us agree this is a good thing, right? Do you have a different perspective on it?
How could you? I mean, yeah. You know, it makes sense, and I use Yelp. It wouldn't bother me to be able to see their health inspection score when I'm browsing for restaurants. I like it, I think. But I don't want to know how sausage is made. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad idea. Like Sarah said, what if my favorite restaurant's only a 55 or something? I think I'd have to take chance.
Blissful ignorance?
Take a chance on that. Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe you can turn it off. It should be an option.
Right.
You just hide that.
It's like not looking at the ingredients on a Cheez-Its package.
Yes. Don't worry.
I know it's not going to be anything I want to see. Same thing with El Farolito. The burritos are good.
There will probably be a Grease Monkey script to filter that out for those that don't want to see it.
Grease Monkey. It. Perfect name for it.
Right.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the saga of FaceTime on AT&T here in the United States. First, only Wi-Fi. When FaceTime first came to the iPhone, AT&T said, we're not allowing that on our data network. Heck no. Then they allowed only LTE customers and mobile share customers, the new plans, kind of their share everything plan. Now they're saying all customers who aren't on unlimited plans can use it. Unlimited plans are the people who signed up for AT&T a long time ago, got grandfathered in. AT&T's Mark Cullen says that the company wanted to roll out the service gradually in order to have minimal impact on the mobile experience of the customers. However, lots of public interest groups, in fact, last September, Free Press, Public Knowledge, and a few others placed a formal complaint with the FCC over the policy. And Matt Wood, the policy director at Free Press, put out a statement today saying, we remain ready to bring our complaint unless AT&T finishes the job and stops blocking this application altogether. So Bob, is AT&T blowing smoke here when they say this is gradual? Do you think they will eventually roll it out to unlimited plans and they're just being conservative?
Well, I happen to have the unlimited plan, and I'm grandfathered, and my whole family is. And this isn't the only thing that AT&T has kind of, jabbed us with the sharp stick. I can't use my iPhone as a personal hotspot without changing data plans.
Right, because they require you to pay for the hotspot plan, but to get the hotspot plan, you can't be on the unlimited plan. Is that right?
Correct. So it's my feeling is AT&T wants to they're not going to come out and take our plans away, but they're going to do everything they can in their power to make us need to switch to a different plan for one reason or another. I think they're trying to have attrition by the death of a thousand cuts, a slow death of a thousand cuts, little insults here, there, and everywhere. And I really don't want to give this up. I use a lot of data, and I like to use a lot of data, and I don't want to worry about it. So
yeah, I think
they've got me between a rock and a hard place. I don't know that I can get a better deal elsewhere, though. You know, I don't think that the other carriers have a better offer for me if I leave AT&T.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is FaceTime a big enough stick to get people off unlimited?
I seriously doubt that it's going to make people change what they're doing. Although I guess if people were showing other AT&T users, hey, look, I can make this call, but I can't make it to you. That's too bad. What's going on with your plan? Oh, you're on unlimited? And usually that discussion becomes about how did you keep that so long? But, you know, when I look at AT&T not giving this to everybody, I just remember back when the iPhone was exclusive on AT&T, the big joke was that every phone call would get dropped. Sometimes I really think that AT&T just doesn't have its infrastructure together well enough that they could even handle a load like this. Because while Skype does exist, and other video conferencing things do too, Apple has a way to make it really easy for people to do things. And so if the amount of FaceTime calls went up, I think AT&T would probably get crushed. So they're slowly doing this. Although I would imagine the amount of people on unlimited plans is pretty tiny at this point.
Sarah, which is worse, just beating the crap out of people clinging to their unlimited plans with this sort of policy or appearing to have some sort of net neutrality bias?
AT&T. Okay. Well, the thing that's great about it is, like, I understand why AT&T is like, listen, you're already getting unlimited. So you've got, you know, unlimited data and you can do so many things, and a lot of other people have to really watch how much data they use every month. So you're already getting something for, you know, something for free that a lot of other people will never get. So let's figure out how to jab you in other ways. I mean, it's sort of like, okay, well, I don't really use FaceTime, so as an unlimited plan person, which I have on my iPad, not my iPhone, on AT&T, unlimited is still important to me. I kind of feel the same way that Bob does. It's like, that's actually the most important thing to me. But if I were to say, you know what, I really do like FaceTime, so I'm willing to switch back to some sort of a plan that is not unlimited, well, then I'm using more data, but then I have less of it. It's just so ridiculous. I don't really know how anyone could be incentivized to give up unlimited. It's even on the principle, you know. It's like, hold on to that
yeah.
Crap.
It's a game of attrition.
Myself. Like battle. Got like heated Bob just said. Just there.
But speaking of net neutrality, Netflix being accused of violating net neutrality. Now, how can usually it's Netflix accusing ISPs of saying, "Hey, you're trying to degrade our service because you run a competing video service," but Netflix, to combat this sort of thing, has started a content delivery network. You might hear it called a CDN. Theirs is called Open Connect. And what they do is they put these machines, these boxes, inside the ISP or near the ISP in some cases to cut the transit costs. So it doesn't have to go through as many networks. It goes right into the ISP. Cablevision just struck a deal. There's lots of companies around the world that have these deals now. And what's happened is Netflix has said, if you're part of the Open Connect deal, your customers will be able to get Super HD and 3D content from Netflix. Super HD is still 1080p, but they say it looks better. You need a 5 to 7 megabit per second connection to get it. Time Warner Cable is in discussions with Netflix about Open Connect. They say that Netflix is holding back this high-quality content to get preferential treatment, and they're implying that that's violating net neutrality. Netflix says Open Connect provides data at no cost to the ISP and does not seek preferential treatment. Here are the statements. Time Warner said in a statement to Multichannel News. Remember, this is Time Warner Cable, not Time Warner, the Time Warner that owns HBO, different companies. Time Warner Cable says Netflix is actually closing off access to some of its content while seeking unprecedented preferential treatment from ISPs. We believe it is wrong for Netflix to withhold any content formats from our subscribers and the subscribers of many other ISPs. Time Warner Cable's network is more than capable of delivering this content to Netflix subscribers today without being part of the Open Connect network, they imply. Netflix's response is, Open Connect provides Netflix data at no cost to the location the ISP desires and doesn't seek preferential treatment. Now, here's the rub. The ISP must connect to the same peering locations as used by the Netflix network and establish connections of at least 10 gigabits per second. So there's some cost involved there, possibly. Also, there's the cost of installing the boxes and maintaining them. And I don't know that those are borne by Netflix or the ISP. So even though it's free to participate data-wise, there may be some other hidden costs here. Does Time Warner Cable have a case here? Is this Netflix playing the game of net neutrality against them?
I don't know if they're playing the game of anything. It just seems strange because Netflix just introduced this Super HD and 3D content streaming, and they require a bunch of infrastructure to be in place. And Time Warner Cable, in my experience in New York, has been extraordinarily bad. Speeds are just miserable, download and uploads. So at least that's my experience from the last couple of years. So maybe it's changed. But if Netflix doesn't want its product associated with a lousy ISP, I think they have the right to do that. It's a little strange for Time Warner to be screaming about this when Netflix just started this. I wonder what other negotiations are going on in the back room such that Time Warner Cable is making a stink about this already.
Well, I think it's probably Time Warner Cable saying, we're usually on the end of the net neutrality complaints. Ha! You're doing the same thing. They want to keep that debate leaning their way. Sarah, what do you make of this?
Well, I don't really understand why Netflix would not want to try it out with Time Warner Cable. What's the incentive for Netflix to say, let's start with Cablevision, unless they're not exactly sure that, you know, bandwidth, speeds, and networks can actually handle what's going on here?
Well, Netflix does want Time Warner to do it. Time Warner's saying that Netflix is requiring too much of them, and I guess it's the cost of maintaining those boxes. I don't know.
Well, okay. I mean, it's you want to play, then there's going to be some costs associated with upgrading the picture quality and allowing for 3D content. I'm not exactly sure what Super HD, like how good it's supposed to be. It's better than 1080p, but certainly not Ultra HD because that's a whole different thing. I don't know. Super HD, I'm sort of trying to get my head around how much better this is actually going to be for somebody like me who thinks 1080p looks pretty good.
Bob, as a consumer, if you were turning on Netflix and it said, oh, that Super HD, that 3D, that's not available on your ISP yet, how would that strike you?
Well, that's how it will strike me because they're my ISP. and yeah, I think the point for me is they can't even do what they're doing now. Stuff stutters. I get lousy throughput. And I'm paying quite a bit for the highest tier of bandwidth, and it comes and goes just like it did in the old days. Used to say you should just go with DSL because you'll get what you pay for and it won't go up and down. At my house, I can't stream movies when the kids are home from school. After 4:30, streaming gets a little sketchy.
But Bob, Time Warner Cable says they're perfectly capable right now. I can't. What's going on?
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And I have the speed tests to show, mm-hmm. I take screenshots of it and save them because it's never anywhere close to what I'm promised, either up or down. And I see, I have an Apple TV, so I'm using their bandwidth for the wireless. And even that is lousy.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of time.
I actually have a separate wireless network running on an airport extreme because of that. But they're horrible. If I had a better option where I live, I would switch. But, there's only one other choice, and I don't like them any better, AT&T.
I think that a lot of Time Warner Cable customers are probably going to not feel much sympathy for Time Warner Cable in this situation, much like you're expressing. But I think what we are seeing is the market place at work. Netflix has run into these issues where they've been given trouble by Comcast, particularly over transit fees. Comcast required Netflix to pay to get access to their customers. And I think this is Netflix saying, well, we figured out how to disincentivize you from doing that. We've run in a CDN. And so if you're going to charge us to reach your customers, well, we're going to withhold some good stuff from your customers unless you play ball with us. And so I think this is actually a positive because I've always felt that what we need to resolve net neutrality is to let people vote with their feet. And the problem with that is what you just described, Bob, the fact that you don't have a lot of choices for ISPs. And we need to solve that for sure. But this is interesting. Netflix saying, yeah, you want to play the bandwidth cap game? You want to try to limit our customers? Well, we can play that game too. And hopefully this was all just a lot of Sturm und Drang here between these two. And it ends up working out so that the customers.
What's Sturm und Drang?
That's German. It just means noise.
Oh, okay.
It's a competing ISP, I think.
German ISP.
Germany.
It struck a deal with Netflix. Let's talk about fitness. We got another fitness bracelet to throw in that pile of fitness bracelets that are out there. What's this one, Ian?
Okay, so I saw this. I'm into these devices. There's yet another fitness tracker, and I know before everyone rolls their eyes or hits pause on the or fast forward on the podcast, just keep listening. It's a different one. This is called the Amigo. Currently an Indiegogo project, and it already has reached its $90,000 funding goal. Now, the Amigo is different because it's a two-piece fitness tracking product. There's a waterproof bracelet and a shoe clip. Now, the hook for this device is that the bracelet can tell what activities you are performing without you having to do much. So if you're doing resistance training like weights, or if you're doing treadmill work or an elliptical machine work, the bracelet itself is supposed to be able to determine the difference between that. It would hook into your iPhone or Android device over Bluetooth 4.0. The bracelet and clip can monitor your workout together, or you could just use only one or the other if you wanted to. It would cost about $100, but if you want one, you got to wait till June for delivery of these little things to show up. Sarah, I know you're into this. This seems, these devices anyway, maybe not this particular bracelet, but do you think this kind of device that would do all the tracking for you, do you think this is a enough of a hook to make this stand out?
Yes, absolutely. The problem with the fitness bracelets, in my experience in the past, is that they're not necessarily accurately tracking what I'm doing. You know, if I'm on a stationary bike, for example, and I've got something on my wrist, well, my wrist isn't moving that much, and I burned a bunch of calories, and it's, you know, not reflective of that, and that can be sort of discouraging. Or people will say, well, clip it on your foot temporarily, and that's like, well, that's not really the way it's supposed to work either. I noticed in the video on the Kickstarter page that they show somebody soldering. It's like, if this bracelet can know that I'm using a soldering iron rather than like maybe drawing, you know, like an etching of a friend of mine, you know, with a precise little charcoal pencil, I'm going to be really impressed. But at least if it can tell the difference between, let's say, running or, you know, coding, you know, where your hands are kind of busy, but you're actually staying pretty stationary and other kinds of exercises, you know, or sort of quasi exercises. I think that's great. That's the way that this technology has to go in order for people to not get bored with it when it's not totally accurate.
I think the soldering aspect in the video is about the research and development actually making the product smaller. I don't believe track soldering activities. Although if that's
a revision,
I saw that, I'm like, that is really specific. That's awesome.
I don't believe it does that. Bob, are you into these fitness gadgets at all or wearable computing?
I kind of am. I've been thinking about getting one of these wristband deals, and I've got the Wi-Fi body scale that records my weight and sends it to the iPhone and tracks it over time. Well, I wonder if these things, you know, like talk to each other. I wonder if my exercise bracelet and its software can, you know, coordinate with the scale so that I can see the effect.
Well, there are actually, I believe some scales, the Withings scale and I think the Fitbit scale, do work with other services. I'd be interested, and I believe they have APIs. So it'd be interesting if the Amigo could talk to your scale so you could track everything. Tom, what do you think? I know you've tried some Nike Plus things and everything, but this seems like it's tracking a lot more data than just like a pedometer would.
Yeah, I actually have never used any of the Nike Plus things or the Fitbits or any of those sort of things. I use the Nike Plus app on my phone in my pocket. and that works for me. But it doesn't do all those things you're talking about. It doesn't, it's not a pedometer. Well, it kind of is a pedometer, but it doesn't track all of the things that this tracks. However, I find it hilarious to like, oh, you know, well, the wrist thing doesn't work. So we're going to give you a shoe clip too. And then we're going to find out like, oh, but that doesn't, account for your center of mass. So we're going to put one on your belt as well. Oh, but we need a pulse detector. So we're going to wrap one on your other wrist. Pretty soon you're just going to be wearing a full body armor suit of this stuff. I don't know. It seems a little ridiculous to me, but I know there's people who really want all this data. So maybe this is the best way to go.
Whatever makes fitness easier, I think people always want a magic bullet solution. So the less work you got to do, the better. And I think this has got a definitely a different hook when it comes to tracking resistance activities, particularly because I believe that I'm pretty sure that the other devices have a very hard time determining whether you're doing weight resistance or not. So I think that might be interesting for those who like to do strength training.
Lepton says he wants a fitness gauntlet with friggin' lasers.
Power glove?
That I might use. Let's finish up with Pingdom. The Pingdom folks generally have really good stats, especially year-end stats. And they've put out their stats for 2012. What do they show, Sarah?
Oh, it's really cool. Yeah, Pingdom is an uptime monitoring service. They offer a variety of services. But what they did was they went through 2012 and said, we wanted to compile as many kind of interesting facts about the internet as possible in a single blog post. And it's great. A few that jumped out at me, and this is sort of a long post, and they've got some great numbers. They've put some nice graphs together. 50.76% of all spam was about pharmaceuticals. That's the top category of all spam. So kind of neat things like that. As far as the number of internet users worldwide, 2.4 billion. That's a lot. Number of internet users in Asia, 1.1 billion. Number of internet users in Europe, 519 million. Number of internet users in North America, 274 million. Now, I, maybe that's just me being naive, but I thought, gosh, North America, so there's a lot of us. Are we really almost half of all of Europe? Now, of course, there's a lot of people in Europe and everything, but these are just really interesting numbers to me. Kind of puts things into perspective. Another thing I thought was great was 565 million number of internet users in China. So that, we were talking continents before, as far as a single country, more than any other in the world, but there's only 42.1% internet penetration in China. So it's like, hey, just give them a couple years, if that, and then how many users are going to be in China? Quite a few more. And this goes on. I mean, I could just be rattling off stats to you guys all day long, but it's a really, really interesting kind of internet in 2012 overview. I know you guys probably looked at this as well. I saw it last night. Did any stats jump out at you, Tom?
I'm always impressed by the stats in China. And in fact, I was a little surprised that it's only 42% penetration.
Well, think of all the people in China who are, they're That's living in rural areas in and you know, they certainly don't have internet connectivity.
Well, I guess what it was is I looked at the 594 million number and I was like, yep, China, man, they got a lot of people. And then you look, it's only 42%.
Exactly.
And they're already at 594 million.
No wonder everybody's like, hey, China's kind of the future. We should really invest in the Chinese market.
Also, I finally started using a Tumblr blog this month. I am so far behind the curve. And I'm always surprised at how many Tumblr blogs there are, 87.8 million.
I have one of them. And in fact, I blogged about this very article on mine last night. 7 petabytes of photo content that Facebook adds every month. Photo content alone. 7 petabytes. Of course, it's, that's obviously going to be bigger than just text. But wow, 7 petabytes and only growing.
When I see numbers like this, it just reminds me every time we talk about like a text replacement thing or an SMS replacement thing. Like, what if we had this cross-platform thing that you could send messages to anybody? It wouldn't cost anything. It wouldn't do a whole lot. That's email. So when I see the 2.2 billion number of email users worldwide, I'm like, yes, we have this. We've been using it forever. It's still the standby when it comes to communications. Because even if you're on a number of different service providers, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, as long as you have an email address, there's no weird extra charges. There's no oddities about it, and that's why spam is so prevalent, because it's still the best way to get communications between two people that are very far away with no cost. So it's good to keep seeing that email continues to be the way to communicate.
You know, and I guess we've witnessed the final death of Orkut because it says that Brazil has the most active country on Facebook.
There you go. Yeah. Also, a lot of people. A lot of people in Brazil. Hey, did you guys know what 37.3 years old means? No. That you're the average age of a Twitter user, which is older than I thought it would be.
Yeah, Twitter's for old people.
Yeah.
I was talking to a high school teacher, and they're like, yeah, Twitter, maybe a few of her students use it, but most of them are like, that's for old people.
What are they? Wow. Well, I mean, according to Leo, he says that his kids are just, they went straight to Instagram. That's
and
their
Snapchat.
Twitter.
Snapchat.
Well, and that too.
Yeah.
Snapchat's. I don't know. We're all old. You should look at this 2012 in review and feel older along with us. Thanks
I'll
to Pingo.
Get right on that.
Feeling older already. Thanks, Sarah.
All right, let's finish up with the randomizer. San Jose Mercury News has this story. Call it Europe's Got Talent for Geeks, they say. It's scientists from around Europe vying for 1 billion euros. That's about 1.33 billion U.S. Over 10 years with different projects. So there's 26 proposals that are under consideration. They were whittled down to 6 last year. 4 have made it to the final round, and coming up in Brussels on January 28th, they will announce which project is going to get the go-ahead. Some of these projects, an effort to craft the most accurate computer model of the human brain to date, a team working to find better ways to produce and employ graphene. I'm a big fan of graphene. A digital guardian angel. And a massive data crunching machine to simulate social, economic, and technological change on our planet. Got any favorites on who you'd want to win here, Bob?
The one that's going to cure the flu. This year has been just awful. I mean, I'm looking at all this stuff and going, it all sounds great, but why can't they cure the common cold and flu already?
That would probably be the social, economic, and technological simulation. Have the best shot
think
at that.
You think you can model that? I don't know. They've been modeling the flu for years, and all they can tell you is this year's worse than last year. I knew that.
You got any bets, Ayaz?
You know, I don't have a bet, but I will say the one I want to see happen is that the accurate computer model of the human brain. Because if you could do that, and I'm obviously jumping a heck of a lot forward, if you could model each person's brain, I'd like to run scenarios and see how I would react to things. It'd be nice to run that, or at least have your friend's brains on your phone and be like, how would Bob take this? Bob would not like this.
A-B testing.
Yeah, so you just check it ahead of time. So you could say, oh, okay. You could really craft your life based on these model brains.
Ah, a model brain. Wish I had one. Let's check what's on the calendar, shall we?
Well, you know, we've got a couple of birthdays in the, in our little twit army. John Slanina, a.k.a. Jammer B. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, John.
Thanks for everything you do in the studio, dude. You're awesome.
I don't know where he is right now. He was sitting there like 2 seconds ago.
He's probably eating cake.
I would hope so. I certainly hope that that's what he's doing. Yep. And not only John, but Brian Brushwood of Framerate and NSFW, and of course Scam School over at Revision 3 fame. Happy birthday to you too.
Best magic trick you ever pulled off. Being born. David Prager's birthday today as well.
Also, friend of Twit, former
and
colleague of many of us.
Amtrak. Rounceville, regular guest on NSFW show.
It's a popular day.
It really is.
Yeah.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
All right. Talking about Google's Project Glass, we got an opinion on these sorts of heads-up displays from someone in the medical profession.
I'm Ted Duchesne. I'm a cardiac anesthesiologist, and I wanted to report vis-a-vis the Google Glasses about how difficult it has been, even in the very confined environment of the high-intensity operating room and ICU, to have glasses and goggles that display highly relevant information like the monitor of the patient. It has been a complete failure from a psychometric point of view. People find it distracting and not helpful. And that market, which has tried to go somewhere for a good 5 years, has gone nowhere because of this fundamental problem of interface. I hope you'll put this on because I think it's an important particular experience. Thank you. And of course, love the show.
Thank you. Yeah, that's interesting. Somebody who's actually got some experience with this sort of thing saying, hey, Google, you got to get that interface right because so far nobody's cracked it. Pretty interesting. Shall we move on to an email, Ayaz?
Sure. We got an email from Jerry in Ohio. He says, hey, TNT crew, during episode 670, you discussed the Lomography smartphone film scanner. While I love the idea of a cheap alternative to scanning your old film, I wonder what quality we can expect. Color correction is easy. I am more concerned with the level of detail that will come from taking a photo of film. I, a few years ago, bought a dedicated film scanner, which can scan negatives or slide film. It even transports the film automatically. I was extremely impressed with the quality of the scans. I scanned hundreds of old negatives and slides. Even though it took a very long time, I'm really glad to have years of old photos available digitally. A dedicated scanner will cost several hundred dollars, so it's harder to justify the upfront cost. However, if you're going to spend the time scanning your own film, I only want to have to do it once.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jerry. There are definitely alternatives to the Lomography film scanner that we talked about yesterday, but they are more expensive. And, you know, I said, and I don't think I'll know until I get one because I have ordered one. It remains to be seen if the quality is good enough for something that's not really expensive out of the gate. And if it's not, then it won't be a very good product. But they seem to think that it's good enough, again, if you have such a high volume that you want to get it done quickly and somewhat cheaply. All right, should we take another email from Lance Seedman in Las Vegas, who says, hi, TNT crew, and says, Jason, too. You talked about how the press claims to not be able to find the original photographer of a photo that they technically hijacked from a Twitter account. Every photographer knows if you're going to release your art to the public, you use EXIF, which is Exchangeable Image File Data, which can be easily set in Photoshop automatically or load a profile. But otherwise, if you just view the photo details on Windows, you can easily save personal notes or read more about the image. So I'm not buying that they didn't know or thought of this beforehand. Unless the image data was removed or image screenshot for a re-upload, excuses only make you feel better or help you keep your job.
It's a fair point from Lance, but I don't know whether there was EXIF data that could be used in this or not. If there was, then that's a smoking gun. I guess it would be easily checked. You could go find that photo. But it's possible that this person who took the photo didn't have any appropriate EXIF data in there. It's, you know, but it is sort of suspicious because if this is a regular photographer, you would think they would watermark it or, you know, put that sort of thing. Not really a watermark, but put that sort of data in there. All right, well, that's it for this Tech News Today. Bob Levitis, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was great.
Let folks know what books you got out, any books you got coming out, where they can find your work online.
Latest book out is iPad Mini for Dummies. You can find all my stuff online at my website, boblevitis.com. And if you've got issues with your Apple stuff, I've got a great team of technicians that will help you fix it, or it's free.
Excellent.
How's that for a deal?
Yeah, that's a great deal. That's Levitis, L-E-V-I-T-U-S, for those of you on the audio podcast, boblevitis.com. Thanks again, man.
Thanks
you can
me.
Find us on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, if you want to suggest stories for us to cover on the show or vote on stories that others have suggested. You can always find us online at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail like we had today. It was a good one. 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Darren Kitchen. See you then.